WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. At the age of 73, Jason Robards was recently described in the New York Times as that rarest of birds, a classically trained, deeply experienced, senior working American theater actor. He's currently starring off-Broadway in a production of Harold Pinter's Moonlight. And Robards is preparing for his role in the new Brian Friel play, Molly Sweeney, that premieres in January. Robards first made his name starring in the plays of Eugene O'Neill. He also starred in a now-famous TV production of O'Neill's The Iceman Cometh and the film version of Long Day's Journey Into Night. He's won Academy Awards for his portrayals of Ben Bradley in All the President's Men and writer Dashiell Hammett in Julia. Robards' other films include A Thousand Clowns, The Battle of Cable Hogue, and Melvin and Howard. Since Robards spent so much of his career performing the work of O'Neill, I asked why Robards and O'Neill were such a good match.
I've never really understood it. There's many people have talked about the fact that both of us were from theatrical families, that we went to sea. I was at sea for 7 years. Alcohol, but I don't think the alcohol plays a part in the creative work. You do that when you get off, you know. I don't think O'Neill wrote drunk, and I don't think, even though that's part of a life at one time that we both had. Fathers, actors, younger brother, older brother, younger brother. That was one of the Long Day's Journey parts. Mother, sort of not with the family. O'Neill's through drugs and mine not there. Maybe these things add up subconsciously into something that you don't know you have. I've always found that I knew exactly what he was talking about in these plays. I didn't find them difficult, but I had good direction, I must say, from Jose Quintero, who I've done most of the almost all of the O'Neill plays with.
I want to play a clip from the film adaptation of Long Day's Journey, made in 1962. Sidney Lumet directed it. Katharine Hepburn plays the morphine-addicted mother, Ralph Richardson, the actor father, Dean Stockwell, your younger brother, who was just diagnosed with TB in the scene we're about to hear. You play the older son, who's an alcoholic. In this scene, you had found out earlier in the day that your younger brother has tuberculosis. The family's been squabbling and delusional as usual all day.
Yeah.
So you've walked out to go drinking. In this scene, you've just returned. You're very drunk, and you're saying things to your brother that you wouldn't say if you were sober.
I want to warn you against me. Mama and Papa are right. I've been a rotten, bad influence. But worst of all is, I did it on purpose.
I don't want to hear it.
Next, kid. You listen. I did it on purpose to make a bum out of you. Or part of me did, a big part. The part that's been dead so long, that hates life. My putting you wise, so you'd learn from my mistake, huh? Well, I believe that myself at times, but it's a fake. Made my mistakes look good. Made getting drunk romantic. Made whores fascinating vampires instead of poor, stupid, diseased slobs they really are. Made fun of work as a sucker's game. I never wanted you succeed and make me look even worse by comparison. Wanted you to fail. Always jealous of you, mama's baby, papa's pet. And it was your being born that started mama on dope. I know that's not your fault, but all the same, God damn you. I can't help hating your guts.
In the scene that we just heard, the character is drunk. What kind of...
Well, he's not, you see, it's beyond drunk. You know what I mean. It's in vino veritas, I guess. He's not, sometimes you get drunk and you're not drunk. You're sharper than ever.
But still, he has been drinking a lot. And I'm wondering how you wanted to play this character drunk. I mean, you could play drunk very broadly. You could play it so that one barely notices. There's a lot of cliches about acting drunk in performance?
Yes, no, I never did that. I just go with the word. Listen, those words are so strong, and that scene is so strongly written, you can't even slur in it. Now, the first part of that scene, he's trying to avoid getting into this part of it, which is the end of it. The first part of it, he tells about going into town and going to a hooker shop or whatever they call it, and he does that in a strangely comical sort of way and pretends to be drunker than he is. And then the truths start to start coming out. And the more truthful the scene gets, the more sober and devastating he is.
Later in your career, you played the father instead of the son. Did you see all the characters differently when you were looking at them through the perspective of the father?
Oh, yes, I did. My trouble with the father, I enjoy playing the father. I've done it about three times. But the echo in it of Frederick March, who played it originally, I can't get Freddie out of my mind. Almost his son, not all his readings, but a lot of his attitudes are still in me because I played 2 years with him as the son, when he played the father. Now I still find that coming through, and also I find my own father, some of his attitudes and readings coming through. I sometimes don't know if I know that part. I have so many other people in there.
Actor Jason Robards is my guest. We'll be back after a break. This is Fresh Air. Back with Jason Robards. Your father was an actor, first on stage and then in film.
Uh-huh.
What movies was he in?
Well, I remember seeing him, I must have been six or something, in the Isle of Lost Ships with Noah Beery in Virginia Valley. And he was the leading man in that. And then I saw him in The Heart of Maryland with Dolores Costello, who was married to John Barrymore at the time. But a lot of his early leading man roles in silent, you know, The Gamblers, he did one of the first talkies ever made, The Gamblers, from an Elmer Rice play. But those things disappeared in the fire over in at Vitaphone, First National, which is became Warner Brothers. They lost a lot of films that he was in. So I missed some of those. But I saw him later in films, you know, when I was growing up. He did a lot. He wasn't going so well then, and he was doing serials and stuff. You'd go down to the local theater and see Chapter 11 of Burn'em Up Barnes, you know, those kind of things. He was sort of fading out, which was not good for him or for any of us, I guess, because, you know, he shouldn't have disintegrated so quickly. But you never know what is behind all that.
When you saw your father when you were very, very young in films, maybe in more successful films, were you, you know, thrilled and excited that he was on the screen? What did it mean
to
you?
No, it meant nothing to me. I didn't know what it was. In fact, I thought he was behind the screen once. And, you know, I was, what, eight or something. I said to my brother, I said, let's go back and get Dad. But no, there was no, you know, it was a movie. But I saw him when I was 11 on the stage. And that really impressed me.
What impressed you?
The way he, his ease and the way he put the character, the way the audience bought into what he was doing. And my biggest thrill was when he was 66, we played The Disenchanted together in New York, which is a play about Scott Fitzgerald and Zelda and all that, and that trip to Dartmouth that Bud Schulberg and Fitzgerald took and wrecked everything, but the guy that played my editor was my dad. And so we played together for 9 months in that play, and that was one of the great thrills because he was terrific on the stage, and that's where he should have stayed.
So
That's what I think.
When you saw your father on the stage when you were young,
yeah.
did you buy that he was somebody else? Was he that convincing that
yes,
you almost forgot he was your father?
I did, yes. It was terrific. That's what I bought. I don't even remember the plot of Square Crooks, but it was a comedy, and it was one of those comedies of the times. There were so many of them that went, and they were very successful, and you never hear of them again. But
so did you ever form a close relationship with your parents?
My best friend was my father all my life.
Uh-huh.
And we were very, very close, and I don't. It was. I still think of him. You know, all in the best of terms. He got me reading. He got me doing, thinking about other things, about politics and the world, and you know, so many things that kids in those days in the 30s weren't really thinking about.
Did he help you get into acting?
No, he didn't help me. But when I said I wanted to do that, he told me to go to the school that he went to. Go to New York, go back to New York, he said, and go to the American Academy of Dramatic Arts, which I did. And I had a very good foundation and had some of the same teachers, by the way, that he had, which is very interesting.
Mm-hmm. When you started acting and you started studying acting, what's some of the best advice you got about how to use your voice?
There was a wonderful voice man at the American Academy called Aristide D'Angelo, and he would make us go every day in our class to the window. He'd say, to the windows. He'd intone everything. And we'd go to the window, open the window, and start intoning everything out the window. And he said, and then relaxation. Then we'd get relaxation, and then we'd go. And we'd do all these things, all these things he gave us out the window. And then he closed the window, and then we would read Shakespeare, Greek plays, this, that, you know, and he would keep correcting us. But the thing that got me was that this was all fine in a classroom, but the American Academy at that time was in Carnegie Hall in New York. We had all the studios there, and we had the theater, which is now the Carnegie Hall Cinema. That was the American Academy's theater. It's a 400-seat theater that we put on plays all the time. So when they took us down for the first time on the stage, and then you found out that stage projection and stage life and a stage voice is entirely different from what we were doing. And that was the greatest lesson I ever learned about using the voice.
So what was it like for you that first time you were on stage and you had a projector?
Oh, I thought I was screaming and yelling. I can't hear you. They're yelling at me from the back of the house. They yelled at all of us. And then you finally pitch your voice somewhere so they can hear you. And the guy that was running the school, Charles Jellinger, was one of the terrific men, and who was the guy that was the teacher of us all. We all shook from him. Even my father was still shaking if he came around. He would sit in the dead part of the house under the balcony and turn off his hearing aid because he had to have a hearing aid, and he wanted us to reach him. So he kept yelling, I can't hear you, I can't hear you. But I finally blew him out, you know.
Jason Robards, he's now starring off-Broadway in Harold Pinter's play Moonlight. This is Fresh Air.